All right, good morning everyone, and thank you to the organizers for having me here to talk about several experiments that myself and colleagues and some students have conducted at the University of Kansas. Now, as a disclaimer here, you can see by my name there, that's not a misprint underneath it, my affiliation. I am a geoscientist by training, a geomorphologist I would consider myself, who studies sand dunes, and I work in the School of Business. So, and I also play around with ants, so we can go into that conversation later if you want. I want to start by acknowledging, put this at the front, because I think it's incredibly important to acknowledge the students that some of the experiments that I've talked about worked with, Hannah Wasserman, Kim Drager, who's going to talk later this morning. But then also acknowledge the faculty member and staff members in the geology department, the geography department at the University of Kansas, Ian Rawl and Dan Hermes. And then in particular, I want to acknowledge Don and Diana Johnson, the late Don Johnson from the University of Illinois, who have always really challenged, I think, our ideas of what organisms can do in the soil. And you know, I worked with Don closely for many years with the ants. And then also the funding that came from the University of Kansas General Research Fund for some of these experiments. I'll throw a shout out to past students as well. John Smith, who's going to talk in a little bit at the next talk about setting up some of these initial experiments, at least the design that we followed and that I'm going to talk about. All right, we're all familiar with a general approach to understanding how soils are formed through time, parent material, topography, biota, and this is a different way of representing those soil forming factors, of course time as well. And the point here is that a soil body is created through many, many, many complex interactions of these different elements. And what I'm trying to do with these experiments and my co-authors and these students are trying to show is that the biotic aspect of soil formation is often maybe not given its due process compared to the others. It's maybe not recognized as being a strong component, or at least I would say the diversity of soil-dwelling insects, as an example, that have an impact on the soil, maybe potentially aren't recognized. I think the talk earlier about the ground nesting bees and how much soil they're actually moving is a great example of how different insects, different biota have tremendous impacts on the soil. It's not just earthworms, which I think oftentimes, you know, we say biotic interaction in the soil is earthworms. And so that's sort of my take on this and where all these experiments are going, is to show the impact of ants specifically on the soil. Now, ants have had a dramatic impact on the soil since at least the Jurassic period. And this is evidenced by trace fossil nests. So here's an example of three different trace fossil nests compared to a modern nest. And so we start off with the plate A here with the Oligocene-Miocene nest. This is just the blacked out nest structure for comparison. We move a little bit older to the Paleocene-Eocene, and we see the same structures in the rock record. And then in the Upper Jurassic Morrison formation, we see the same structures as well. And so, and here's a modern nest from a study that we did where we see similar structures to what is noted in the rock record. And so the simple point here is to say that while ants and other soil-dwelling insects are having a dramatic impact on the soils today, they have had a dramatic impact on the soils for many, many, many years. Okay, so they've been around for a long time and they've had this impact. And I think the next talk in particular will talk a little bit more about the geologic history, or at least the importance of these organisms in geologic history. Now, when we look at classic ant studies, and this is by no means every ant study that's been done out there, especially if we're looking at ant studies that are looking at how much material is being moved by ants, the typical way of investigating that amount of material that's been moved is to do a surface investigation. So here's the harvester ant nest mound in western Kansas. And if I was going to, you know, in the classic sense, if I was going to test how much material is going to be excavated here, I would simply remove the surface mound, let them, you know, dig around and play around for a few more weeks, come back, remove it, you know, and track the amount of sediment that's been brought up to the surface. But what really the issue with this sort of study is there's absolutely no understanding of what's going on below the surface. Okay, maybe we can infer a little bit based on what's been brought to the surface potentially, but we really have no idea what's going on below the surface. And so, you know, with keeping this problem in mind, where these studies that I'm going to talk about today come into play is that they take what's known as a neo-ichnological approach. Now, neo-ichnology is simply the study of modern organisms and the traces that they make. And so ichnology itself would be looking at trace fossils in the rock record. So neo-ichnology is simply having organisms involved in controlled experiments. And so here are some examples of neo-ichnological studies with different organisms that have been conducted at the University of Kansas. Crayfish, larva beetle or beetle larva, cicadas, and then a study that I conducted on the ants. And what's really nice about neo-ichnological studies is that you can document not just the structures that are created, but you can document the behaviors that are used to create these structures. And furthermore, you can, when the organism is done, in certain cases where you can actually, you have an open nest, for example, an open structure, you can actually cast. You can use plaster and other materials to cast these structures, and you can then exhume the structures, and you can take a look at actual architecture of the nest. You can, in some cases, you can actually see marks in the wall of where the organism was actually using its arms or what to excavate. And so, you know, these experiments are really helpful in terms of understanding behavior, but what they're also really helpful in doing is changing environmental conditions. And so if we want the experiment to be wetter, we can simply add more water. If we want to use a different sediment grain size, for example, we can do that. We can set up an experiment to do that. And so we can test different environmental conditions using these neo-ichnology experiments. And so the four experiments that I'm going to talk about today are taking this neo-ichnological approach looking at ants. And real quickly, I wanted to set up the experiments to give you sort of an overview, and then I'll go dive into each one a little bit further. The first experiment was a relatively small enclosure with a small number of ants. For most of these, we're using Western harvester ants. And the initial aim was to quantify movement of carbon within the enclosure, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. The second experiment, which piggyback off the first experiment, or the results of the first experiment, was that of a large enclosure with a large number of ants. And here we were aiming to document the mixing, the advective and diffusive mixing of sediments, which I'll define in a little bit, but also replicate behaviors that we saw earlier. A third experiment, which was conducted by Hannah Wasserman, MS student in the geology department, involved two medium enclosures with large numbers of ants, and the idea here is to, again, document advective and diffusive mixing, but in a 3D pattern versus in, as you'll see, versus the enclosure we used. Also replicate behaviors under a different sedimentary condition. And then finally, a fourth experiment by Kim Drager, who's going to talk this afternoon, dealt with large enclosures again, a different ant species this time, the idea being we're going to document ant behavior, nest architecture, and changes in soil geochemistry. Okay, so let's just dive right into these experiments. So experiment one, and yes, those are Army Man for scale. I put them in there as a joke to start with, and it actually was really good because it provided a marker of height. So it actually was really good. So your crazy ideas will work out wonderful someday. So the enclosure here is just a rather large ant farm, 36 by 36 centimeters, 1.5 centimeters wide. 50 ants were introduced, and it was basically an AC profile. And the idea here again was, so my interest as a geomorphologist, I'm really interested in geochronology, quaternary studies, and I do OSL dating, radiocarbon dating, and it really upsets me when someone will come up and give a talk and they'll have a radiocarbon age or an OSL age and it's out of order. And someone will ask, well, why doesn't that age? Why isn't it in chronological order with the stratigraphy? And the response is, oh, it's probably bioturbation. It's like, how do you know? I mean, that's a clever, you might not be wrong, but, you know, that's sort of a cop-out answer, right? And so my idea here was, let's take organic-rich material, let's take that same material and burn off all the carbon, and let's put it in and let's document the mixing and then measure, actually take samples and measure how much carbon was mixed within the, that was sort of my idea here, to sort of, you know, empirically prove that carbon is mixed by these sediments, or by these ants. Now, what happened was our, we actually, what we did unintentionally was now we have four different layers of different colored sediment. And the end result of this experiment was not the carbon measurements that I wanted. I sort of abandoned that after I saw what they were doing. And instead, what we noticed was the tremendous amount of mixing that was occurring within the enclosure. And so, again, because we had those different color sediments, we were able to see this. And so here are some examples of some of the mixing that we document in this study. So here again is the ant farm after the ants have excavated. Here are these three images. They're aligned. The top image is up here. So we actually find some sorting in the nest mound, bigger particles at the bottom, smaller at the top. We could see that, you know, we have backfilling of burrows that were unused. Here's an example of that. And then down at the bottom, way down at the bottom, what we have is, if you see real closely, you can see this yellow sand. And we had this idea that, you know, we had noticed that we had dark sediment that was moving to the bottom of the nest. And we sort of were thinking, well, where did this sediment come from? It, you know, maybe it just came from this bottom, second bottom layer, and it just fell down. Or maybe it was there in proximity, so the ants used it. So we had this great idea, let's sprinkle some yellow sand at the surface and see what happens. And so we sprinkled yellow sand at the surface, and as you can see, that yellow sand was brought down from the surface and used to backfill the nest at the bottom of the nest. Okay, so you know, we have good evidence of mixing throughout the nest, both upward and downwards, okay, from the surface all the way down into the bottom. One of the other things we did in this experiment is we took twice daily documentation of the nest structure and how they actually constructed the nest, and we came up with this model of nest construction based on those observations, based on what we were seeing through the glass. And what we found was that the ants, as they're constructing their nest, we know through other studies, through other excavations, that harvester ants have this sort of helical end nest architecture with these lobate type features coming off the corners of the helix. And what we found is that these helical structures are actually created, or at least in our example, they were created through these circular networks. And so what would happen is the ants would create these circular networks, and in doing so, they wouldn't get in each other's way of excavating material as they came back down in the nest. And then through time, as the nest developed, what would happen is they would shut off part of the chamber or part of the tunnel system. And the end result of that was your helical structures with your lobes at the end. And so this, again, is an example of what we were able to observe by watching the ants in the nest, is this is maybe one of the ways, and again, it's a laboratory-controlled setting. They might be restricted to the space of the glass, and it might impact their behaviors. But it's a way that, you know, we were able to show that the ants are replicating these natural structures, you know, through a process of these networks that they then close off, which was rather interesting. Another thing we're able to do in these studies is actually document different behaviors. And so in this study in particular, we identified six ant behaviors, and the behaviors pulling, raking, pushing, forcing, cutting, and carrying. And if it's going to work, I'm going to show you an example of raking. So this, no, it's not going to work. Speaker ready room, promise me. There we go. Okay, so the ant's going to come down, and he's going to rake, it's going to rake sediment. And so it's using its forward legs to pile the sediment up underneath it into a ball, picks it up, and walks out. And so that's an example of raking that we document. And so we have these other behaviors as well that we document. And we have actually in this paper, all these videos are online, and you can go back and you can see all these different videos. But again, the point is simply that with these neoclinological experiments, this is how we can, you know, we're able to document this. We're actually able to video document this, what's going on. Okay, so we took this first experiment and then we put it on steroids. Okay, So let's, you know, we had such great results. Let's actually introduce a bigger experiment now. And so in this case, we have 64 by 100 centimeters, 10.7 centimeters wide. We have 1,000 harvest strands this time, several different sediment layers, and we allowed them to go for 12 weeks. And the idea here is we are going to document advective and diffusive mixing. Now, let me define these real quick because we just sort of made them up. But advective mixing, what we're terming advective mixing, is sort of the long-distance movement of material. So when an ant takes a shell, for example, a carbonate shell was at the bottom of the enclosure and moves it to the mound, that's an advective mixing pattern. Versus a diffusive, where you have high amounts of material deposited close to the sediment layer and then it sort of progressively dies off, you know, sort of, for lack of a better term, a bell-shaped curve away from the original source layer. And so that's the difference between those two. And then the other part of this is we want to actually quantify that mixing. We want to see how much actual sediment was going to be mixed. And so there's the enclosure before. You can see we added some vegetation at the top of the enclosure as well, and that's a clay-rich soil from Kansas, dug out of a ditch. So we let them go for 12 weeks, and here's a before and after. And so the ants, again, sort of went after this, and it's hard to make out, but the ants made it all the way down to the bottom of the enclosure. So they were able to get through the entire enclosure, all the different layers of the enclosure. And again, the idea here is we're trying to document the advective and diffusive mixing. So what we did was we actually counted sediment grains at different placements within the nest. And so to quickly describe what this image is showing is here's the height of the nest. This is the surface, so this is all mound, okay? And then these horizontal bars right here, this dashed line, are the original sediment layers. And so, for example, green is a good example where we can show diffusive mixing. So the further you get away from the nest, you get this bell-shaped curve of sediment decreasing. But then you have a high amount of advective mixing as well, okay? And you would expect that if you know, we know that ants do bring material to the surface, so we would expect there to be advective mixing. But what this doesn't actually show on here is, I mean, it sort of shows it, but for all of these sediment layers, we also had downward movement of material, deliberate downward movement of material. And in particular, what's not shown on here is there's examples, I'll go back here, there's examples of plant material that was brought all the way from the surface and used to backfill the bottom layer of the nest, okay? So the other point of this was to, you know, not that we just have upward movement of sediment. There is a lot of movement. Look at everything at the mound. But we also have the downward, deliberate downward movement of sediment. A grass leaf doesn't fall down the nest, right? I mean, that's moved deliberately down the nest. Okay, so what we did then, we took our measurements, we quantified it using this modified cylinder equation for estimating volume. And, you know, essentially there's a lot of numbers here, and this is actually a table that's been truncated. But the bottom line is here is based on our through-the-glass estimates, we came up with that the ants were able to mix 16.38% of the enclosure. So of that entire enclosure, 16.38 was mixed. We then, once the ants were dead, once they were, we casted it, and then we excavated it. And as we excavated, we measured both the cast and tunnel systems like this, gallery systems that were filled in. We measured, took actual measurements, and what we came up with is a closer number to 25%. So our estimate is under, it's a minimum estimate, I would say, of the amount of mixing that the ants actually did within the nest, or within the enclosure, excuse me. And I'll get to why that's important in a sec, but the other thing that was really sort of shocking to us after this experiment was what occurred with the nest mound. So here's the original nest or original surface structure. We can put in a boundary there for ease of viewing. And if we look at the before and the after, you know, we see one dramatic change is the vegetation's been removed, which is characteristic of Western harvest strands. They do remove the vegetation. When we look at actual volume estimates of the mound versus subsurface mixing, what we find is that more mixing is occurring below the mound than is actually occurring at the mound. Okay? So again, going back to these original studies that are talking about how much material is being moved by ants, If you're just looking at the mound sediment alone, we are dramatically underestimating the amount of mixing that's occurring. That's the point of this. And we can take this and we can apply it to a setting where we have heavy harvester ant infestation. Let's say, I don't want to use that. That's a bad word. It's their landscape, right? So the ranchers don't like them. But this is along Interstate 84 in Idaho. And so you can see the interstate for scale here. And these white dots are harvester ant mounds. Now, not all of them are active. Some of them are dead, but are no longer being used. But this is what they'll look like at the surface, right? So they clear the vegetation away. And so all these white blotches are mounds. And so in an example like this, we would have approximately 40 mounds per hectare, something like that, 40 active mounds per hectare. And, when we look at our mixing rates, and if we look at just the surface or the mound versus what's going on below the mound, we have a huge amount of material being moved every year in an example like this. And so, considering the whole nest, again, based on our conservative estimates, we're looking at almost 9 tons per hectare per year with these ants. Now, we could put up an earthworm number there and see that the earthworm, doesn't even compare. Now, granted, these ants aren't found in all the environments that earthworms are found. And so I'm not arguing that, ants have a greater impact than earthworms generally, but I think in some landscapes we can make that argument where we don't find earthworms, ants potentially take that earthworm role as the primary organism that's mixing up the soil. So that's an example from that experiment. All right, so experiment three, let's change our environmental conditions again. Let's use a different enclosure. And so the idea here was we're going to use two different enclosures, 1,000 ants, 500 in each, but we wanted to see how the mixing would change if we got rid of the narrower enclosure. And so now we're moving to a more square, cubic enclosure. They're not cubes, obviously, but, it has a more, we're able to track the 3D movement of sediment much more efficiently than we are with these smaller enclosures that are limited in width. And so, again, we have the same basic setup, different colors sediment to be able to see how the material is mixed. And there were two different setups. In this first one, all these particles, all these sand sizes in here are actually fairly fine sand, which is important when we get to some of the behaviors we see. In this sediment here, we had fine sand as well, but we also put in some coarse gravel layers to see what would happen, see how the ants would handle that. And as it turns out, gravel is not a problem for ants, or at least not for these ants. And so again, we're interested in reproducing behaviors, documenting how the mixing occurring in a 3D form. And so here are some examples again of the mixing after 6 weeks. And again, if you just look at these, this is a great image of, it's a mess. It's absolutely amazing how much they are mixing the different colors of sediment around. And it's not just that they're pulling all the sediment to the top and mixing in the mound, but they are bringing red sand down to the bottom. They're using the sediment to line their nests, or the chambers and galleries within their nests. Okay, so they're using it to backfill, right? So here's an example of a tunnel system that's been backfilled. Okay, so it's absolutely amazing to see these things. If we actually do the quantification in of the sediment, you can see that our diffusive and advective mixing that we see in that other experiment has really turned into, it's just everything is mixed, right? It's thoroughly mixed. And so I think it's just a good example, good evidence of showing that the ants are doing a tremendous amount of work with sediment underneath the surface. The other thing that was sort of cool with this experiment, because we had different sediment size involved with the experiment, is that we noticed some new ant behaviors, things that we hadn't seen in a different experiment. And the two of the behaviors that we document are known as, that we term sweeping and then binding. And I want to just, I'll put a little plug on this binding, because the binding, we need to do more experiments on this. But our belief is that because the moisture content of these chambers here was much less than the other experiments, that the ants are actually using biologic secretion to help create, or to help line the walls of their tunnels and galleries and actually create aggregates with the mineral particles so that they can more efficiently excavate them to the surface. And so I'm going to show this video twice so I can show you what the sweeping is and then what the binding is, what we believe the binding is. And again, we are going to do more testing on this to see if we can reproduce this as well as actually, you know, is it possible to actually see actual secretion coming from the ants? Is it possible to measure that? So first, the raking is going to occur in, or sorry, this not raking, sweeping. The sweeping is going to occur in here, and it's very fast, and it's actually coordinated sweeping. So they're doing it with each other, you know, they're all working together. And so, ready? No, you did it again. So see, they're sweeping as a group. Okay? I mean, it's very, very fast. They're moving there. It's much, much different behavior than raking, where they're also using their forward legs to collect sediment. But in this sweeping motion, they're not collecting the sediment. We actually feel they're conditioning the bottom of the tunnel some, for some reason, so that it's easier to maneuver in. I'm not sure. But it's a much different motion. All right, the binding biological secretion is going to happen with this guy right here. Okay, and you can actually see at the end of this video, this is sort of the prep phase. And so in the prep phase, the ant is going to lift its abdomen, and what it's going to do is it's going to tuck its abdomen underneath its body and sort of rub it against the tunnel wall. And that's that, again, is the process that we feel is the biogenic secretion. And this is just one example. So again, we're going to look right here. So abdomen lift. And there was the, did you guys see that? Okay. So, and again, we have many examples of videos where we're showing this, the ants are doing this. And these behaviors were not documented in these other experiments where we had higher moisture. So, again, our working hypothesis is this is the way the ants are adapting for those conditions. All right. Experiment four, I'm not even going to really touch on too much. Kim Drager is going to talk a little bit about this in her talk. But again, two enclosures, a different species of ants primarily, and it's designed to explore the nest architecture, ant behavior, and the impact of organic matter on the soil. So going back to my original experiment, I think this one did a great job at that. This is her setup. I'll let her talk about it. But essentially, she found carbon enrichment in low carbon areas. If they're mixing sediment, that makes sense. Again, carbon depletion in high carbon horizons, and then increase hydrological conductivity due to nest macro channels, which again, I think all that makes sense. And I'll let her talk about it. So, all right, to sort of wrap up here, I just want to talk real quick about the importance of ants again. They're amazing insect engineers, and they have a great impact on the soil. I hope that these experiments have helped show how some of that mixing actually occurs. But, you know, all these observations of behaviors in the mixing patterns, they have indirect and direct implications on soil development, nutrient cycling, and groundwater movement. And so here are just some examples. Ants create preferential pathways for water. Ants move organic matter advectively and diffusively. They move sediment, non-organic matter, advectively and diffusively. They create and destroy soil aggregates. And they also add organic matter directly to the soil via their nest construction behavior. So going back again to the geological record, keeping in mind that, you know, we need to do further explorations of you know, ants' impact in the past as well as today. And so here's an example of a Pleistocene terrace, floodplain terrace, that is just riddled with ant nests, about 140,000 years old. And so, you know, if these things are dominating a landscape, it is not fair to say they're not having an impact on that soil. Because they're just, the paleosol is filthy with them. And so they have to be having some impact on the soil. And then again, going back to my background, you know, from a dating standpoint, from a chronology standpoint, and there was the great comment from the about the archaeologists looking at the pollen. It's absolutely accurate, right? If we know that sediment and organic materials being directly taken from the surface down into the ground, it's not fair for us doing dating, OSL dating or radiocarbon dating, to say that this hasn't been altered in one way or another by biology. So that's sort of my, I'll just leave with this. My final push here, I always say this whenever I talk to soil scientists, and I hopefully everyone agrees, but we just need to continue to push within the soil science community to recognize biota as a major constituent of pedogenesis. It is, and we just need to keep pushing for it. So, all right, thank you.
All right, thanks, Alan.